Hi, I'm Kelly, and I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Hey, Kelly.
And I didn't get nervous until about 5 minutes ago. I came rolling in here like a rolling dervish, like I normally do. And so I have no idea what I'm going to share. I'm going to do the best of my ability to share program of recovery, my active involvement with Narcotics Anonymous as a member for almost 32 years. My anniversary will be May 22nd of this year, and I'm 32 years clean. I don't know when that happened and how that. You just stay, and you just show up every day, and every day is different. And then with a little bit of willingness and consistency and commitment, my sponsor really likes that word, you get this many years clean. I remember the first day of the dinosaur. It was in a different church. I've attended many, many of them, many conventions. There's so many things to do to find hope in the membership of Narcotics Anonymous. I really don't know what I want to share because I get to stand here for 45 minutes, and sometimes it's up between me and God. What comes out of my mouth. This morning was a little challenging. I take my grandson, my two-year-old grandson, every Friday night, and they have terrible twos. That phrase is for a reason. I have three children, and you forget what a terrible two is and the episodes they have. And she was an hour later picking him up, so I was given a small window between relinquishing him and showing up here, like trying to be reserved and look like I'm ready. So one of my hair's not like really crazy. I got clean in 1992. I came in here not sure what I was doing. I cartwheeled in here. I came in on the request of Queen Anne's County Health Department. I had an automobile accident. My two sons, young sons, were in the car when I had the accident. I hit an electrical pole going 60 miles an hour. They really do fall in slow motion. Accidents happen in slow motion. Everything in the car explodes. Keys, anything on the dash, glove boxes pop open, everything. So seatbelts are a big deal. My children's lives are probably saved because I was following direction and they were in a seatbelt. I hit the dash, the steering wheel, everything else at complete force, broke several different things, and wasn't charged with the driving accident if I went to Queen Anne's County Health Department for an evaluation. And I went to that. I minimalized every question they asked me. I got upset. I cried as a victim. The counselor was as nice as he could be, trying to explain to me I was an addict. And I said, but you don't understand, my husband is a heroin addict. He's got the problem. I'm just trying to survive. So I'm still a victim. But eventually, I had to do outpatient. And eventually, part of my treatment was to come into Narcotics Anonymous. And my first year, I came. And I got a sponsor. I got a home group. That Tuesday night home group, Staying Clean, is still my home group today, which is pretty cool. In the years I've been clean, I've had four sponsors, two in name, and I've had two ladies that's worked with me for many, many years. And the greatest part about having a sponsor from day one that knows you, you can't deviate from your story. You can't tell lies because they were there. So thank God, you know what I mean? And I've always had very direct sponsors. That's a little different than my personality. So I'm grateful. They were both good communicators. They're both, one has passed away, and I'll talk a little bit about that. and I can hear my voice shaking. I'm nervous. And I'm usually not. Yeah, that's what I've got to calm myself down. I was hoping there was a podium or something because I'm a fidgety kind of person. So I'm kind of just standing here. Let me go back to my basics every day. I wake up, I'm acknowledging that I'm recovering addict. I go to meetings. I call my sponsor. I have a support group. I'd still work the steps, write them to this day. But this is my recovery. This is what I believe in. And I don't go to places that are questionable. And I don't pick up. And to get real with everybody, I have to talk to, like, a doctor. I have to raise both my hands and go, I'm a recovering addict. You can't give me that. Or a dentist, I'm a recovering addict. The Vicodin you're getting ready to hand me is not good. I can't do that. And then if I do have to do something, oh, God bless you, I can put my thing here. Nice. That'll work. But I have to be honest with myself and others. I have to be vulnerable that I'm a recovering addict. And some things I can't do. Have we got a problem? Oh, okay. We're on top. Still too short. How's that? Can everybody hear me? Are we good? There we go. I think we're good now. Good deal. Now I completely forgot what we were talking about. No, you're fine. Oh, let's see. What were we talking about? Oh. I wanted to share something. I was getting ready to share it with April a while ago, and I said, you know what, I'm going to share it with everybody because, honestly, it's kind of interesting. I just talked about that two-year-old grandson. My daughter is sleep-deprived. She has a full-time job, a preteen, a 12-year-old, and a two-year-old. You can see the stress on her face, and they're just exhausted. And her husband was talking to me on the phone out of his concern yesterday, and I said, you know, I'm reflecting back. And that's about the time I started taking benzodiazepines on a daily basis, multiple times a day. And I went, oh my God. I didn't connect the two. I started using it 13, 14 years old. Cigarettes, alcohol, marijuana, cocaine. That was the love drug for me. It was cocaine, anything with speed. I was a daily user by the time I was 18 years old. By the time I started having children at 23 and 24, my life was already out of control. Already out of control. I was lying. I was manipulating. I was just the dark side of the addiction. My children looked unkept. What actually brought me in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous was the car accident I just told you about that was actually forced in here. But at that point, I needed to surrender. I just couldn't live the way I was living anymore. I couldn't survive it. And my son was just entering like a pre-K. And you know how they do the group pictures? My little son was in the front row. And he had his gray sweatsuit on and dark circles under his eyes. His hair was very disheveled, and he looked abandoned. And that was my kid. And it was evident that he was not cared for. You know, like he should be. And the shame and the guilt of that really affected me for a long, long time. I eventually got comfortable as a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I got into service work very early because when I got here that many years ago, probably the amount of people in this room was the amount of people in the East Bay, and we all had to participate in service work. And people would come find you to make sure you got to your meeting and to make sure there's a lot of support back then. I got really loud then. Anyway, I'm probably one of the people, and I'm jumping all around, and I apologize for that. I'm not really used to this. I'm probably a very good example of no matter what, because I got here with two small children. I don't follow direction well. Within 28 days of being in Narcotics, a member of Narcotics Anonymous, I got into a relationship. Mind you, I was still married. First marriage, two small children, but he was in a long-term rehab. So this person with 3 years clean said, "Oh, I like you, let's get in a relationship." And I went, okay. No boundaries. Moved in my house less than 6 months with trash bags. Addicts come with trash bags when they move places. They just do. And for 8 years, he was in my life. This is how I don't follow directions. My daughter, who's 30 this year, just turned 30. Her birthday is 4/4/94. My divorce, this was with my second relationship. My divorce from my first relationship, Judge South signed it on 4/4/94. So the day my divorce became final, I had a child for my second relationship. I was still living in shame and guilt because I just couldn't manage life well. I couldn't make good decisions. I kind of lived by default. And I looked that word up. Actually, that's the only thing I did for research during this meeting today, is I keep realizing that there are times I've lived by default. And default is not making a plan, which I'm known for telling my sponsees to make plans. And I make many plans for myself. But sometimes society, family, relationships, circumstances will make decisions for me instead of me taking charge and making the decision for myself. And it causes me consequences and pain. The last 2 years have been challenging. Business transitions, changes in people in my life, conflicts with other people. And I'm not naming names, but I'm just saying in my personal affairs, I've had a lot of conflicts in the last 2 years. And it's become very painful, and it's affected my self-confidence and my self-esteem. And yesterday, I had a text message confrontation, and I know you all do this. The phone rings and you see a phone number, or you get a text message or something, and your anxiety level just immediately goes up. I hate that adrenaline. I really do. I used to be like that all the time in my addiction. In recovery, we go through the meditations, we go through reading daily meditations, we go through working a program of recovery. We can still fall straight back into a mode of anxiety and then have to get ourselves calmed back down without medication. Now I remember why I got addicted to benzodiazepine. The last drug I have 34 years clean. If in the beginning I didn't struggle with alcohol, that was the first drug I put down, or picked up, last drug I put down, and if I ever went back out, it would probably be, that's what would take me out. And I have to raise my hand and go, be aware of yourself, be aware of who I am, tell the truth, call people when I need to, call people consistently anyway. All of my friends live in, are members of Narcotics Anonymous or recovery. And I'm grateful for that. Very grateful for that. I'm very fortunate that I have my own home, my own car. And I think once that I realized that life didn't owe me anything and that I had to work for what I had and I had to appreciate what I had, that nobody was going to do it, should do it for me. It's not their job. The victim mode went away. I was always an independent person, but for a long time, in my early years of my addiction, I felt like a victim. I didn't know until starting to write steps and working with sponsors and getting honest with myself that I even understand my feelings, some of the trauma that I had dealt with and kept moving, didn't really deal with it, medicated it. Why I said earlier is that I'm a no matter what person, kind of belong in that club. I watched my second spouse, my fiance, he passed away, unexpectedly, massive heart attack. He had a few years clean. I had 7 or 8 years clean. I was basically widowed with 3 small children and a business. I came into meetings. He was friends with most of the people in this area. They held me up when I couldn't help myself up. They stayed with me. I took a very deep spiritual journey during that time of my life. Continued to raise my children. Then remarried for the third time, and it was a blended marriage of 5 teenagers. Try that one on. That's a train wreck. And not because of the people involved, but just teach 5 people how to drive a car. Teach them basic, when they're trying to be who they want to be and their decision making is really poor at times, and you're the one trying to teach them, I'm telling you, that's crazy. It's crazy, and it wears you down. Today, they're all successful people in their own right. They're very hard workers, and I'm grateful for that. Grateful for that. I think we had a part to do with it, but it wasn't the prettiest days every day. We had kids shimmying off of the second story balconies, which is one of them to die. They caught the couch on fire. They caught the bushes on fire because they were smoking to hide and throwing it out the window like we weren't going to find out. Had one handcuffed to the front porch. That was an interesting day. And then the sheriff came one day and said, "Is this your son?" And I said, "Yes, sir." And I called him on the phone and I said, "You better get here now. I got a sheriff in this living room. You better get here." And he showed up. He drove home. The cop was so surprised, but I mean, basically, he was more scared of me than the sheriff. With good reason. Good reason. That takes a lot of energy and a lot of mental strain. And I don't mean it in a bad way, because these are lovely adults today. But there are periods in time in their lives that every day is stressful, just of the situations. And recovery is the best thing that I had to learn how to be a parent, be an employee, be a daughter. I was too busy in my 20s and 30s to take the time to spend with my parents. My parents are 82 years old. They're both still living. I'm very fortunate I still have my parents at 61. They come visit me every Friday to visit my grandchildren. They're not visiting me. They're visiting my grandchildren. But that's okay. I take yearly trips with them. I get in the car with my father, who's a 95-mile-an-hour driver at 80 years old. It's a very scary situation. And I talk about I'm on a trip with the drill sergeant and his wife, because that's kind of like what it is. We have no destination, no purpose, but at 6 a.m., we got to be in the truck ready to go somewhere across the country somehow. And my mother's backseat driving. I'm in the front seat. I'm supposed to be the navigator, but he's not listening, you know. And it's fun as it can be. It's hysterical to watch your aging parents be their real selves and willing to enjoy their company. That's the change in me today, because they're only going to be here for a short period of time, and I'm wise enough today to know that. I have the privilege of being a parent to my children. I have relationships with both of them. My children, and I have relationships with my stepchildren, but not as much now. When they grow up, they move on. My daughter lives 7 minutes away from me, and my oldest son is autistic. So I'm always going to have a certain kind of relationship with him until I'm no longer here. I'm going to share something with you. The No Matter What Club is, my son, my middle child, I had three natural children. My middle son passed away at 21 years old. He had a cancer called T-cell lymphoma. It was not found until it was in stage 4. He was in the military, we went from Easton Hospital to being transported immediately to Johns Hopkins, where he lived for 45 days and fought like everything he could. I watched him go through, you know, spinal taps and radiation where they bolted him to a table, and just, I had to shave his head. And then he got to wear cool bandanas, you know what I mean? Because my son was really a kind of a, his goal in life was to be an artist, so you can imagine. He was very artistic, very agile, but he just wanted to have fun. And he fought very hard. And he didn't know he was going to die. I don't think he ever really, at any point, thought he was going to die. And it got so bad that they had to medicate him because the pain was so severe. And he died in my arms. His heartbeat went from the normal rate down to like 25 beats, and it just kept going down and down, and he passed in my arms. And I was able to be present and encourage him, and read to him and play funky music. And a friend of mine who was a therapist for me, my first therapist when I started trying to get offensive, she was my therapist. She would come up and visit, and she would bring meditation tapes, and she would do Reiki on him, and just different things. And there was a support system through his dying. And my sister was very good about being present. And it takes a long time for you to recover for something like that. It's like a freight train going through. All of a sudden, you realize you're wide awake, but all of a sudden, it's like a freight train just went through you and go, oh my God, that happened. Your brain can't absorb it all at one time. So for the first year, you just have to breathe. Because for the first couple of months, you're not sure if you are breathing. But you go in meetings, and people treat you like you're wounded or a baby kitten, and you're like, please just let me sit in the back and just have one or two close people that I'm very comfortable with be with me, but stop getting in my space because I'm overstimulated and I can't do this. And please don't, you know. And then your second or third year, you begin to act normal again, or somewhat what you think is normal, but you're forever changed. 2 years after my son passed, I got stage 3 breast cancer. Mastectomy, reconstructive surgery, went through 3 or 4 surgeries, a lot of steroids, a lot of nausea medications just to combat the treatments. My son had a port, and I was the one who had to like bathe him and take care of this port that was in his arm. When they went to put a port on me, and I said, please. And I literally, in tears, begged them, please don't do that. I can't do this. Please don't do that. And my doctor, God love her, her name is Carol Tweed, and she's in her 40s, and she's just this. You ever met a person that just loves life and they're energetic and they're just, they make you feel empowered. And that's who she is. And she said, well, we're going to let you try because you might be able to do this without a board. You might be able to do this straight through your vein. I said, one day at a time, please. You know, total surrender. And I got through 26 active treatments without a board, which is really not heard of often. And I did radiation. I got bolted to the same kind of table my son got bolted to. And they threw a heating blanket on me one time. And I jumped straight off of the bed there with the heating pad, you know, the heating blanket, because I used to have to wrap my son in heating blankets when he was going through. They swing with fevers and cold chills. And I was the one in there 24/7 packing him down with ice or putting heating blankets on him. Somebody puts a heating blanket on, you don't realize the trauma until you're in the event. And all of a sudden, I'm like, please get away from me. Please get away from me. As you can see, I survived stage 3 breast cancer. 13 years recovery from that. I had some guilt. He died, but I survived. I struggled with that. A 21-year-old passes away from cancer, and here this, I get cancer at 50, 49, and I'm still here. But the thing was, is that when I got cancer, or when he got cancer, his sister was 16, 2 years, 17 or 17, coming out of high school, going into college, and she was gonna be a nurse or a doctor. She was gonna be something. And that was just me. I, no matter what, you will be self-sufficient. I don't care if I have to pick you up and carry you to your self-sufficiency education, but we're gonna do this. She got pregnant at 17 and I was devastated. But she graduated an honor roll student. She graduated 6 months early, immediately started college, had her child in February. She was actively in college. Graduated, she's an RN today. She has a nursing degree. My granddaughter's 12. But when I got cancer, I had a 17-year-old daughter in college with a newborn baby, 6-month-old baby. And my daughter had already lost her father because the guy that I talked about earlier that passed away in recovery, that's her dad. So she's already lost one parent. And now her mother's got stage 3 breast cancer, and her brother just died. I wasn't ready to leave this earth. And that was a day of on my knees a lot. Please God, please don't, please let me survive this. And it wasn't about me. It was about what was Kate gonna do without support at this point. I survived cancer. I was bald. My granddaughter was bald. I had a couple of people offer to shave their heads. They were guys, so it didn't matter. The girls wouldn't shave their head, but the guys are willing to shave their heads, you know what I mean? So that was kind of cool. As the years went on, you have to deal with body image. I had a friend of mine shave my head when my hair started falling out. That's a very powerless thing when your hair starts coming out in your hands. And you have hair like my hair's short right now, but my hair's wild. And it was falling out. And a friend of mine shaved my head. Everybody in the hairdresser cried that day. Except me, I don't even know why I didn't cry. I think I was just relieved. I have no idea. Couldn't wear wigs or hats, that just wasn't me, so I started wearing big earrings. And Regan, who has a jewelry, made me go big earrings, colorful earrings. So you get support in the most interesting way. This journey, you don't do alone. And Narcotics Anonymous is very good about not making you go alone. People show up. And it may not be the people you expect, but the universe, God, the whole thing, they show up when they're supposed to. Sometimes we're supposed to stand there and feel something to grow from it. But other times when you reflect back, you realize you weren't alone. You never were. It's just a journey. And do it to the best of your abilities. And people laugh at this, and I'm going to share this, because you don't know unless you go through it. You look fine when you're bald. You don't look fine when you have no eyebrows. Mm-hmm. You look deathly ill. And then you have to, it's a whole other adventure. And thank God there's recovery, because you can do a little bit of grace and dignity and support. When I was 5 years into recovery, both my children bought a house. Alexander's gone, but Kate and Nick are still with us, and they're young adults. My daughter's a go-getter. She found her house. She did all the footwork. She asked me a couple questions. And, she bought the house for her husband loved. My son is autistic. I will forever be a support system for him. I was using when I was pregnant. I had him at 7 months. He was 32 weeks gestation. I will forever feel responsible for that. He's high-functioning autistic. He married a young lady who's autistic. And I have to tell you, my middle son's name is Alex. My son met a lady 2 months after his brother died at a lunch place. She was, in a convenience store lunch place. And she gave him her number. Her name is Alex. She's a redhead like my son was, and that's who he's married to today. So it's kind of weird that, I'm like, Nick, what are you doing? They bought a house. We helped them. It was a renovation house. It's wonderful. But once they got their house, these are the things that come back to you you don't realize. Once they both were established, they had their house, their car, their jobs. I got on my knees again. Please, God, don't take me. Please let me be. Stay here. I was so terrified that my time was done and my cancer would reoccur because my children didn't need me anymore, is what my stuff told me. And I begged God, please don't take me. Let me stay. I want to, I'm humble enough now to realize that being a grandparent is a gift. You know what I mean? And a lot of things you become real humble about. And in saying that, a couple of my friends, I've lived long enough that there's been 2 or 3 ladies that have gotten the same diagnosis that I have of breast cancer, and they didn't survive. And I'm like, why do I get to be here and they don't? And then I had 2 sponsors that have really worked with me my whole time. My sponsor, Les, my sponsor today is Linda C. from the Bay Area, and she's a really great sponsor for me. She loves me, but then years ago when I would act up and be stupid, she'd say, she was very good at these short, quick, sentences that I went, ow, but they were very well done. Les was my other sponsor from Delaware, and she worked, she took care of her husband when he had cancer, he passed. She built a house. She was very good with money. She built a house and retired to Florida. That was her dream. She grew up on motorcycles. She grew up fixing them. That's when I first met her. I thought she was a guy. I wasn't sure what she was. I was terrified of her. And she kind of took me and another lady, Lee, under her wing, and she was there for us for everything. And she moved to Florida. We would go visit. We would take trips to Florida and visit and all that stuff. And she was riding one of her Harleys because we're addicts. She had like 3. You know what I mean? You retire, you build a house, big enough garage, you can put 3 Harleys in it. You know what I mean? And a guy, one of us, a young man, crossed the center line and hit her head on her motorcycle. And she lived for like 2 months severely injured. And, Lee and I got on a plane, went to hospice to visit her, and a couple of days later she passed away. And you can do everything right in here and still, you know, have something tragic happen. And you have to be ready for anything that comes at you and pick yourself back up. And it's all right to come into meetings. And if you have to sit in the corner and just go, all right, I'm sitting here for me. Even if your whole body's vibrating, you're here, you're showing up. You're seeking help, you're seeking support, you're in a safe place, because you're not going to go out there and use, I'm not going to call a doctor and go, can you give me some medication? You know what I mean? And because I know all the names of them, and I know what they do, and I'm sure through this period of time, I could have done a lot of things. And that's the thing I have to tell you, I had was put on steroids when I had cancer, because chemo will take you down on your knees, literally take you out from your knees. And I had been put on steroids, and I'm like, you don't understand. I like all this stuff. I'm an addict with 20-some years clean, and you've just handed me a slippery slope. But because of my diagnosis and my treatments and all that, it was a necessary thing, because I wouldn't have been able to, you know, do a lot of things. So my daughter monitored the medication. And one day she called Dr. Tweed, my empowering little doctor, and said, you got to get mom off these steroids. She's going to kill somebody or herself. And she was right. I mean, I was so high strung. I was in my attic throwing things down. We were going to clean out the attic. And I'm hanging from the stair thing from the garage, throwing stuff at her like she's going to catch it and do something and get rid of it out the front door. And so eventually they were able to wean me off of them. I never got high off of them. I just got crazy. And I was crazy in my addiction, but I'll be honest, I take heart medication now, because chemotherapy and radiation affected my heart. I have a very high heart rate. So I have to take these heart medicine for that. But I still am crazy. I have a crazy mind. It doesn't matter if I have new drugs in me. My brain just thinks differently than the average person. That, you know what I mean? That's what got me here. Is whatever, you know, my self-centeredness, what, all of these things. And I don't know that I talked about using. It's not about using today. Really, for me, it's about living. Not surviving, but living and thriving. And even in the worst of times, I still have to, because the last couple of years, I feel like I've been in somebody described it the other day as, it's kind of like you've been in a car accident. I said, well, I can relate to that. That's very traumatic. And after they said that, I went, you know, that's how I feel. I feel like I've been in, you know, a traumatic event. And for me, it was. But having to work through it, you don't bring it, some stuff you don't come in meetings and go, what? And throw up all over the people with your private stuff. That's what your sponsor, your support groups for. But on everyday stuff and the weird things that we trip over and fall over, it is. I'm poor at driving. I think I have good driving skill. I must not, because I've probably been in driver improvement multiple. Well, I have. I'm raised both hands here. How many ladies my age get to get a driver improvement? I'm called an aggressive driver. I know better. But I get behind the wheel and I turn into a crazy lady. You know? So my point is that I'll always have shortcomings. I need to come in here, raise both my hands, and go, there I go again. And don't excuse it. Try to work on it. And I do with the help of others. But thank you for letting me share.